Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me is Jack Piattelli. Jack, I hope your voice sounds better than mine, because I've been screaming at Javes all week.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound very good. You yelling at the players a lot these days?
Well, it's just instructional. Okay. Let's be clear.
All positive. No.
Instructional. Okay. Instructional is not always positive, but it is not negative either. It's just instructional. The thing that I have to work on is my tone.
Okay.
I'm sure you're surprised by that.
Not at all.
No.
Are you a yeller?
Not nearly as bad as I used to be.
Right.
Again, it's very much instructional for me. And a lot of it is go on the field, get off the field. And then I run the box, so I assign numbers, and I yell, go, right? So I have the kids not look at me. I have them face out on the field and listen. So that, and sometimes it's loud, so you have to, bleh, go.
Sure.
Like, that's.
So you raise your voice so they can hear you, basically.
That's what I tell the parents. Yeah, yes, yeah. That is exactly what I tell the parents. Another high school coach, we'll bring him in right now. Neshoba head coach, Matt Biggs. How we doing, man?
Great. How are you guys?
Doing great. We got Jack here. I know you guys are kind of in the same region area, right?
Yeah. And I got to say, a good friend of mine, I'm not going to mention his name, but mentioned that they played against you not too long ago, and he was very impressed the way you coached your team and the way your players competed and performed on the field. So I got in touch, and we talked a little bit, and I thought that you would be a great guest. I know you've got a history of playing lacrosse in high school. You went to AIC, played, I believe, for Tim Robbins, right? You graduated in 2015. You're from Oakmont, Mass, correct?
Westminster, Mass.
But Oakmont, Westminster. You went to Oakmont High School, correct. But you played lacrosse there as well, but you were a multi-sport athlete, and you've been at Neshoba now for 7 years. You've done a great job building a program. Not a lot of people know much about Neshoba Regional. I think some people, including myself, got confused with Neshoba
Tech.
Very different, obviously. But just talk a little bit about your background in lacrosse and the high school. I know it's a regional school, what towns it's involved with, and how you got involved in lacrosse coaching.
Well, thank you for the kind words, first and foremost, and happy to be here. I jumped into the world of lacrosse as like a seventh grader, so a little bit late. I was fortunate enough that my father and our next door neighbor started a youth program up in Westminster, Ashburnham area. So that was kind of jumping the ship from baseball to lacrosse and really falling in love with everything that lacrosse had to offer. From there, I played for said Oakmont Regional, same kind of situation. We didn't have a lacrosse program as a freshman. We started off as a club team, and then transitioned to varsity lacrosse as the years went on. From there, I played club lacrosse for Colson out with IAS when that existed. Now it's the Oaks and Catamount and all sorts of different monikers. But that was my kind of, and I'll tell my players the same thing, my first taste of what lacrosse really was made of, right? Playing against top talent and things like that. From there, I played at AIC for 4 years, was fortunate enough to be a captain as a senior, and got to play in the NE10 conference, which, as you guys know, can be quite the challenge in D2. So I think it was fun to cut my teeth at AIC and really kind of learn from Tim and Shannon Sligo, who was the coach for me my freshman and sophomore year, and learn the game.
Interesting. You brought up Jeff Colson, just retired this year. He stayed in it for so long, man. Like he's a great guy. I've known him for a really long time, and I just want to congratulate him on his retirement. I think it's, we see guys that contribute so much to the game, especially for Colson. It's a Central Mass, Western Mass guy. Like, he was one of the main guys to build up a lot of places, because there weren't a ton of club programs back then. Like, he was kind of the guy that you had to go to that IIS showcase, especially if you were coaching in Division III or Division IV, as I like to call it, when I was at Daniel Webster. You had to go to IIS showcase because those were all the kids that weren't necessarily playing club everywhere else, and those were the kids that were still looking to play in college. And if you're at a different level of college, that's where you got most of your kids. I got several kids from that showcase,
so. Yeah, and I had the opportunity to work with Jeff. He used to run free clinics in Central Mass, 88 80 99. Yeah, asked me to come up and work with the players, and obviously had the indoor facility for many years. And you'll always find Jeff at Lake Placid every. Yes. I see him up at Lake Placid every year. He's got a team or a couple teams up there.
But always.
There's a guy who got into the game for all the right reasons. Wanted to give players an opportunity to put a stick in their hand and see where it takes them.
And was a big part of that facility, like keeping that alive for a very long time because it was not making money.
No.
And he still got a board together. I actually helped him write a proposal. They did not use it. My language is a little too flowery. I'm sure you're surprised. But he was very gracious about it. He's an awesome guy. I love when you bring in coaches that are younger and they have these like totemic mentors, especially in New England, to work with and influence them and get them kind of excited about coaching, because I think that's kind of one of the things that we need to push forward. And one of the things that we talk about all the time is there just needs to be more coaches, more players, more refs all over New England. Like, we all think like, oh, we have it made. We do not. One specific example I'm going to cite is there was a Bentley played St. Michael's this week.
Very close game.
OT, and, right? Yes, and a very controversial ending that a ref did not overturn. People are saying that the shot went off after the buzzer. I've seen the shot. It's an incredible shot. It's maybe one of the best. It's top corner. And one of the guys that was videoing the game sent me the clip, and he's like, can you believe this? Blah, blah, blah. Like, why aren't there better refs? All this stuff. And I was like, first of all, there aren't a lot of players in Vermont, which means there aren't a lot of coaches, which means there's even less refs. And the way the trickle-down economics of lacrosse work is that if you don't have a lot of players, you don't need a lot of coaches. And if you don't need a lot of coaches, you don't have a lot of teams, and you don't have a lot of refs. So that quality will go down. Like, if you play in Vermont or Maine, and then you play in Mass or New Hampshire, it's a huge difference in just the... I'm not going to say quality. I'm not going to cast that many aspersions, but the consistency is the thing that changes a little bit. And that's something I'm sure we've all had to deal with, Coach. You've already played two games. You've had one postponed. How is your season going so far?
Oh, it was great. I mean, of course, that lovely snowstorm changed our momentum a little bit, but being able to start off against such a juggernaut in Longmeadow was perfect for us to create a ring stick. So for us, I think in the trajectory of Neshoba, being able to even host such a team was huge for our culture and huge for our brand. But I'm happy with the way that we're progressing. It's still early, right? I mean, this will be game three this afternoon, but I'm proud of this group. They're eager to learn. They're eager to work hard. And it makes my job so much easier.
Coach, when you talk about Central sports in general, Central, and then even more so Central lacrosse, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, is there aren't a lot of people talking about in the last few years, but there have been a number of very good players to come out of Central Mass. And actually, your hockey team won the state title in 2023. And you won in 2022. We had a conversation before the podcast. You told me that Central Mass crowns a Central champion. And in 2022, you won the Central championship. And as I recall, it used to have the Central team would play the Western Mass team. And then the winner of that game would then play the Eastern Mass for the championship. Now it's all changed. But are you frustrated in any way that the Central Mass doesn't get the attention that it deserves? And hopefully this podcast will help that. But what are your thoughts on that?
It's a great question. I think playing at AIC, I got to experience kind of the Western Mass lacrosse culture. And then, of course, the Eastern Mass lacrosse culture is so strong. So it's always kind of like you see the Western Mass powers crossing over to the Eastern Mass powers. But for some reason, it's like, okay,
they skip Central Mass on the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, with St. John's playing in the Catholic Conference, that's a whole nother station. But I have to kind of tip my hat to programs like Algonquin, Wachusett, even Leominster's been around a lot longer than us. But they've kind of paved the way for those inroads. So an assistant coach at Westfield, for an example, Justin Bard, who I played with at AIC, kind of helped with some of those relationships and building out West. But I know, and Kyle as well, the whole power ranking system has changed everything, right? Oh, so for us in Central Mass, it's forcing us, for good and bad, right, to push out West and to push out East so we can build a competitive power ranking. And us being in Midwatch A, we play against Shrewsbury, Algonquin, and Wachusett twice. But even with that depth, we still need to schedule schools like Longmeadow. We're playing Walpole and P this year. So I think it's an exciting time for Central Mass lacrosse because we can prove that we can compete with these teams. But at the same time, staying humble and understanding the deep-rooted culture that's in Western Mass and Eastern Mass.
Coach, I think it's great you're going out and playing the Longmeadows. They came to you, and you're going to play Walpole. It's forcing you to go out and play these teams to get the higher ranking, but it's also exposing your program to the Walpoles, to the Longmeadows, and your players are being exposed to programs that have been around for a long period of time. I mean, Longmeadow has been around forever, and even Walpole, so it's a win-win for everybody.
Absolutely, and I think the saying goes that iron sharpens iron. Right. So there's no way for us to continue to elevate our program without playing. So Jack Rogers helps us out over at AB too. We scrimmage Acton Box per year. And yeah, sure, we take our lumps, right? But it's taking lumps in the right direction where we can learn from these coaches and these athletes are true lacrosse players, not your hockey, your football guy that is looking for another sport. So it's been really fun to watch Neshoba grow and develop into a lacrosse school, and if not a lacrosse school, then certainly developing some top end talent.
Now you draw from three different towns. You could just mention the three different towns you draw from, and do those three towns have youth programs?
So we draw from Bolton, Lancaster, and Stowe, and yes, we do. We have Neshoba Youth Lacrosse. My assistant coach is on the board. And give credit to Ian McLean for doing a great job with that program and some others before him, where now, like you're saying, there's that feeder program that allows us to continue to elevate our game as well. So we run some youth clinics at the high school level to try to create some inroads there too, but we certainly aren't the program we are without that youth program.
Coach, are you more of an offensive guy or a defensive guy?
So I had the pleasure, and I'll give Jeff Colson credit for this, is showing up to the club circuit and saying to Jeff, "Hey Jeff, thanks for having me, but I'm an attackman." Right. And that illustrious, where then he goes, "Well, you say you're an attackman, but if you want to play college hockey, you're not an attackman." Right. And then learning to play both sides of midfield. So my title would be head coach and offensive coordinator, but I grew up, you know, pretty quickly in college by playing short stick defensive midfield and then graduating to one or two offensive reps and then trying to cut my teeth that way. So offensive coordinator would be the short answer to your question.
Yeah, it's interesting. I coached with a guy who was a short stick D-middy his entire career, but was a two-way kind of in high school a little bit. But when he went to McGill, he was a SSDM against Canadians. So that's imagine the ultimate SSDM training, because you're going against Canadians every day. And that kind of default makes me the offensive coordinator. So it's funny working with two different sides of the ball. Do you have that relationship with your assistant coach that's going to be a defensive coordinator?
Yeah, Joe and I work, I'd like to think, seamlessly. He played college across at Keene State. I spent time with programs like Wellesley. He spent some time at Emmanuel College as well. So working with him, it's nice because as high school coaches aren't always easy to come by. So to have such a great mind in Joe, it's a huge lift. So yeah, in the transition game is what we preach to our guy, being able to move the ball and make good decisions on the fly. So it's been fun working with Joe.
Now, are your players, a number of them, looking to go on and play in college? And can you mention some of the players you've had in previous years that are presently playing in college?
So I think right now it's about 10%, right? 10% of our players are looking at a higher level, and that number's come up from, right, let's be honest, it was a sport where you could stay in shape, you could hit somebody, and trying to change that frame of reference where, no, this is a game of skill, where it takes all the best, you know, acts of other sports, to now where we're landing guys every year. So I think, to give credit to, if I was further on, Braden McLean, for example, was at Assumption College and then transferred over to UMass Boston. Jack Shartner, Quinn McLean, Braden's younger brother are going to UMass Boston next year. And we have a number of guys playing club lacrosse as well. So it's kind of in a cool transitionary period where we're starting to see a lot more guys play high level club lacrosse and really push themselves to play at the next level.
What's the percentage of kids playing club lacrosse versus not playing club lacrosse?
I'd probably say like 60%.
Wow, that's high. I think we're only at like 33%, but I'm in a different place than you guys. You guys have a lot of club teams actually to choose from in your area, right? I mean, how many club teams are servicing like Central Mass like now? I mean, it's you guys, it's several other teams that
yeah, there's a number
in.
Of different options.
There's
for
a
sure.
number of options. It's one of the things that I'm always jealous of when I have kids ask me like, coach, where should I play club? I'm like, well, you have two choices. So if one doesn't work out, you can go to the other one. And we've had several kids on my team do that just because you want to be on the club team that serves you the best, right? And I think that's a huge part of developing into a successful player at the high school level. And one of the things I wanted to kind of follow up with you on is I think people don't understand a lot of these regional schools. I went to a regional school. Regional schools, when you're feeding from different towns, there's history with these towns, man. Like there's kids that like, but now, okay, so you're from this town. I'm not from that town. And there you have to kind of, especially when they're younger, kind of bed them in where you're like, all right, we're all here together. We're all at the same school now. It doesn't matter. You guys played each other in eighth grade, seventh grade, and you almost got into a fight at basketball practice or something. Like, it doesn't matter. I think that's one of the most underrated parts of being a coach in high school is keeping the head straight on and coming with it. I'll be honest, something I'm very much struggling with right this year. How has that been for you at Neshoba?
I think thankfully Neshoba Youth Lacrosse, those three towns play together. So at least from a lacrosse perspective, I don't have to deal with it as much. But every once in a while, somebody will make a play and you're like, oh, that's a Bolton kid. It's like, well hang on. We yeah. all have the same jersey on. That's not a Bolton kid. That's a Neshoba lacrosse player. And I think my personal perspective is culture is everything. If you don't have culture, then it doesn't matter how much talent you have. It doesn't matter, you know, what systems you run. If you don't have the player next to you believing in some sort of commonality or common goal, then it's going to be an arduous year. So I think it's a perfect segue for your question because the three different towns bring three different perspectives. And like our captains this year, Quinn, Dylan, and Jack. Quinn and Jack are from the same town, but Dylan's from a different town. But you never really know it because they're so in team and they're bought in. So I have to give credit to not only them, but you know the five generations of senior leadership that we've had before.
You talk about culture. The culture wasn't there when you arrived. So what steps did you take to build your culture and was it setting certain expectations from your players?
Yeah, I think it started with changing the culture at practice, right? You guys know too, there can be just so many different ways to run a practice. And I'm not saying there's one right way and there's one wrong way, but there's certainly more wrong. And I think it started there. Right? What is your expectation at practice? What's the first thing you do when you step on the field? Are you doing a lap? Are you jumping into small stick skill lines? What are you doing? And then pushing my guys to fence on a wall, I think was a lot different than what had been done in the past, much to my AD, Tanya Rich's nightmare of us playing wall ball in a parking lot. But yeah, I think culture at practice is huge. I had a lot of different conversations. Right? What do you want this lacrosse program to be like? I know I want it to be, but if you guys don't buy into the same ideas or norms, then it won't work. So I think every year we try and come up with three words to use. So this year, the guys and I picked communication, character, and disruption. So the first two are pretty simple, right? They're straightforward. I'm sure every coach can be on that regard. And then disruption for us has nothing to do with negativity or cockiness. It has everything to do with change the culture again and change how people see Central Mass lacrosse. I don't want us to be 16-0, go in tournament and lose in the first round because we're not ready. So I'd rather schedule the teams like we talked about already, cut our teeth that way and learn from the best. And that way we can generate and take little pieces here and there from people that do it better than we.
Yeah. And one of the things too, when you're looking at setting up how the teams are going to interact is the younger players and the older players, how are they going to mesh? Do you have a JV team? And if so, what is your kind of plan to integrate the kids that are at the varsity level and the kids that aren't?
Yeah, so I mean, we have 42 guys. So in my advice to any coach would be to start together. So we warm up together as a varsity and a JV team. We do our stick lines together as a varsity and JV team. We really only split up when it comes to systems and things like that, where there does need to be a little bit of a give and take in terms of a skill level. But the first half hour of every single practice, we're together. And you're right, there's no way to build culture if the seniors aren't with a freshman or even a sophomore. So the other thing that we try and do too, from a locker room perspective, is we're all in the same locker room. Part of that is, of course, because we're at a public high school, so we don't have that much going on, but they're all together. So they can kind of learn from the Quinn, Jack, and Dylans and really kind of follow their behavior, right?
Yeah, I think just having some experience playing in high school and coaching high school, I think the attitude sometimes is with the seniors is like, oh, that kid's a freshman, or even the juniors, we're not going to pay attention to him. He's not going to be able to help us. He might not be able to help us today, but he might be able to help you tomorrow. And once they realize that, if they can help you maybe win a game 9-8 instead of losing it 8-7, we got to push these freshman guys along, because they're going to make us better, and we got to make them believe what we believe in, and that's coming to practice every day, working hard and working as a team.
Yeah, I think practice is underrated in terms of what that does for your program, right? Exactly what you're saying, Jack. We have freshman number 14. They show up every day willing to compete in May. You're infinitely better because of that freshman, whether he finds the stat sheet or not, right? If you don't have that kind of that build up and in that culture, exactly like you're saying, then for lack of a better word, you're wasting your time.
What I loved about the freshmen more than anything else, when they showed up, you had the sophomores, you had the juniors, you had the seniors, got a pretty good idea what you have. When the freshmen step on the field, you don't know what you have, and you don't know how far they can go. So let's see how far they can go, right? And I'm a true believer in giving every kid an opportunity to develop and play. A lot of coaches will say, all right, the last 10 guys on the roster, the last 10 guys at JV, freshman and sophomore, we're not going to waste our time with them. But they're wasting their time, the coach's time, because they should be spending time with those younger players, those freshmen, because you could turn them into being your next captains.
Yeah, I think, honestly, that's what I'm struggling with this year. Because I'm the head JV coach and the kind of offensive guy for my high school, Hopkinton High School. And I haven't been able to coach a second of varsity because the JVs, or the Javes, as we call them, the Javes have just needed all my attention. And I the way I've tried to mitigate that is, like, I pull aside the captains and the upperclassmen. I'm like, hey, we got to do this. Like, how are you guys doing with this? Like, because we have simple offensive concepts, obviously, but, like, I just want to make sure we grasp them. And then we played a scrimmage, and it just looked like no one played lacrosse before. And I was like, oh no, I've made a wrong calculation. But then we played two games this week. We win both games, and it's like, oh, the varsity's fine. And then we played a JV game, and I'm like, oh no, I still need to keep doing that. There, the team will reaffirm what you need. That's the thing that, like, I have so much trouble wanting to help everyone, but in the back of my head, I'm like, I know they need it more. And it's I didn't sleep, like, after our first game, our first JV game, because our varsity game was double overtime, very exciting. And then we played JV and we got waxed 7-1. And I went to practice the next day and I was like, guys, I gotta tell you, like, I didn't sleep last night. And they're like, oh, because you were so excited. I was like, no, because of the second game.
And they all told you they slept great, right?
Yeah. They were like, oh, coach, I'm great. I played Fortnite for 14 hours. I feel amazing. I won two games. But it's that kind of give and take with building. And like you said, culture is super important. And I'm lucky that we have basically one town feeding all of us. but I know what it's like to have to kind of stitch it together in terms of this kid. We even one town, you can have a kid from one side of town and a kid from another side of town. They don't like each other either. So it's kind of like, okay, we have to get this together all on the same page. And like you were saying, I didn't agree with this when I was a college coach. I thought games were more important always. I was just like, we're always doing games. But now that I'm a high school coach, I'm like, okay, everything is practice. Like, why aren't we doing more game situations in practice? And I wanted to ask you, and I ask most coaches this, and this is my recurring question. What is your favorite drill in practice that you see has the biggest impact on your team?
In program, we call it basketball, but outside of the program, it's mostly known as West Jenny.
Yes.
Right? So you're playing that 3-2 quick movement. We're not dodging. We're trying to figure out that 3-on-2 game. So I think that we should, honestly, now that we're talking about it, we should spend more time playing West Jenny. But Joe preaches pick downs and things like that. So if I try to get as much touches as possible, and I try to talk.
I love to hear that, Coach.
I try to talk as little as possible. So our stick lines at the beginning of practice are 5 guys max. So when you're going through all the classic stick lines, the whole point is if I can fit 30 touches in 5 minutes, well, then at the end of the year, that's just going to exponentially grow, right? Yeah. So I think West Jenny's like that, where you can really get people moving up and down the field, regardless of their midfield lines, regardless of a starting defenseman, backup goal, it doesn't matter. You all have to play with each other, all have to pull that diamond and play that box. So I think that's a short answer to your question, I guess I would say.
And you talked about you like to push the ball, up pace game. Your practice the same way. You want up pace. You want them to have fun. I talk to parents, and I've talked to you about this too, Kyle. Is, you know, you want the kids pushing the parents out the door to go to practice versus the parents, you know, pushing the kid out the door to get to practice.
I think the hardest part being a high school coach, and Kyle touched on this a little bit, is we have them for 2 hours a day max, right? And sometimes 2 hours is too long. But there are days where we don't play lacrosse. And it can kind of be a hot take depending on who you're talking to. But there are days where we spend 20 minutes with our sticks and things aren't going well and you just need to reset. So there'd be times where we play team handball or we've literally had practices where it's 85 degrees, 95 degrees on the turf. Let's get what we need to get done in 20 minutes, and then let's play kickball. Let's take time to build culture and have some fun so that tomorrow when it's 95 and we do need to kind of hit the stone a little bit and push ourselves, we have the mental awareness and the mental strength to do that.
Can I tell you that at my first couple of years at Hopkinton, we did that, and it made me so angry. Because I came from a college background of coaching, and I was just like, no, we need to play lacrosse. We're a lacrosse team. We have to do this. And the head coach is buying the kids. We're getting popsicles. We play dodgeball in the preseason. I'm like, why are we playing dodgeball? We have to pick teams. We have to do JV and varsity. He's like, just let it happen. Like, we played basketball one year. We played football. And I jammed my finger. It's still kind of broken. Okay, playing football with the boys. But it was like, I remember that practice now. I don't remember the 400 other practices I've done, like, front to back. But I remember that one and everything we did in it. And those kids were all JV kids. And now they're all varsity starters. Right? So it's totally the way to go. And sometimes you're totally right. You have to stop and reassess, because these in college, it's kind of your first job, right? If you didn't work in high school, being on the lacrosse team is your first job. And you got to approach it that way. It's part-time kind of, depending on what division you're in. If you're a Division I player, it's your full-time job and good luck. You got all these things you have to do, but taking that break sometimes I think is like some of the best, that's like the best advice I've ever heard, honestly, is to just, you need to stop sometimes and you need to see what's going on with your team. They might be tired. They might have, you know, had a field trip the day before that went 20 hours and they didn't get home until like midnight when they didn't sleep and they went through school. Like, you're always getting these kids after school. And I think we forget as adults, if you had a bad night as a kid and you went to school, you're a zombie. You're not going to do anything. You don't know how to push through, especially when you're younger. And then you learn how to do that as you get older, even when you're a junior or senior in high school. But yeah, it's such a great piece of advice to maybe just pull back and try to have something be fun. It's so hard when you're just like, can you please just do the drill that we want to do? Can we please get through this without five drill killers ruining this drill? But you have to, if it's like six kids that can't focus in that day, you know, you got to do something else.
Yeah. Change is good. You've got some coaches out there that run the same drill and drills every single day. They start with the same warm up. They start with the same passing drills. They go to a fast break drill. They do a 6-on-6. They might do West Genesee, but they do the same thing every single day. No creativity, no change. So what's the motivation for the player? You know, change the drills up, work on the same skill set, doing different drills. There's so many different drills out there to build the same skill sets, figure out how you can, every player can master the basic fundamentals and make it fun.
Yeah, I think the last drill we do at the end of our warm-up every day. So it is repetitive, but we just call it freestyle. The kids are so good now. And even if you spend 5 minutes on Instagram or YouTube, the way that the kids play lacrosse now is so impressive to me. Where I think about myself when I was in high school. Yeah, and I played at AIC, right? It's college lacrosse. Man, these kids are better than me. And that's okay. And learning from them is so important. But we do this freestyle drill. I don't care what it is. If it's a behind-the-back crate, if you're throwing it around the world, even better. I don't care. As long as you're doing it in the right place. And I hear so many coaches sometimes be like, well, Jack, I thought you would throw the behind-the-back there. Well, because my strong hand was covered and I had an option to throw to the middle with the behind the back, and that was my only play. And watch these such high level talents play at D1. And what are they doing? Right? They're using both hands and being able to get creative and open up space for themselves. So when kids throw behind the back in practice, first thing I say is great, great job. Maybe take 3 steps upfield and then throw it, right? Or maybe don't try to go behind the back in your offhand yet. But it's so fun to watch these kids play. So I resonate with what you said so much, because sometimes creativity can be frustrating. And Kyle said drill killers too, which we all know. We have one player that just never gets through when we need them to get through.
Yep.
And that's okay, because if they can get it on week 6 instead of week 4, who am I to say that they're doing something wrong?
Even though it's the same drill at the end of practice, coach, it's different every day because they're trying something different and trying to be creative in a different way. I love it. I think it's great. I remember in high school, our coach would not let us shoot behind the back or pass behind the back. That was like, yo, God, you can't do that. And now behind the back is standard for a high level players, college, and even high school. I mean, I think like it's an art, right? And if you're an artist, you're going to try and create different things. You're a writer. Yeah. You're always looking to write in a different way, maybe, or even write something different on a daily basis. So I think giving them an opportunity to be creative in their own way, something they look forward to, and if they practice it enough, they're going to be able to do and have some success. And again, the bottom line is they've got to have fun. You got to bring them back to the field with the vigor and the excitement to practice all over again.
Yeah, and you look at some of the names that I think of when you're talking, right? I mean, earlier on, you're thinking of Gary Gate. Right, and him jumping through the crease. You're thinking about the Paul brothers and how creative they were. And then, like when I was in college, you're watching the Thompsons play, and you're like, man, they are not playing the same sport that I'm playing.
Right.
And it looks like they're genuinely having fun. And yeah, the Thompson brothers could back you down on a rocker dodge and throw something like that. But then next thing they throw a bonnet, and you're like, oh man, it's 4-0, really fast.
Right.
Yeah. We had a kid.
But it's so natural for them. It's just like it's part of their being. Like they grew up doing it. When it's like to them, it's nothing. To us, it's like, wow.
Yeah. And we had a kid throw a BTB top of the box into the crease in our game yesterday. And he came, it was a good pass. It was a little low, so we didn't get it, right? But the guy was wide open. It was okay. And it was an attackman. He threw it to another attackman. They all came in and they saw me marching out. And they went, oh no, coach is going to yell at us. And I brought them in. I was like, hey, I'm not going to yell at you about the BTB. It's just got to be a little higher, right? Like, that's open. Okay. And he just was like, he's like, what? And I was like, he's a junior tag man. He's very creative. I'm like, you're allowed to throw that. And then I looked at the other tag man, he's a freshman. I'm like, you are not allowed to throw that. And we understood. And he's like, yes, coach. Yes, coach. Yes. Yes. Like, that's, I like to have we have rules, but like, not for, they're not universal. Right. So we get the ball around. We do very traditional things, but we also do non-traditional things from time to time. It just depends on what is open. Right. So just one of the ways that I coach offense is we take what the defense gives us. Right. We always hit the best matchup. We identify that on every single play and we hammer it until it doesn't work. And then we move it around. We try a different part of the offense. We try a different initiator. We try a different cutter. And that's just what we do. Like, it's very adaptive. And I think that's like what everyone does. I don't think that's unique at all. I don't think it's even hard. I just think it's the way that you have to play lacrosse now, as opposed to what you're saying, you know, 5, 10 years ago, when I was coaching college, we had a system. And if you didn't know the system, you didn't play. Like, that's that. And even when I was playing, if you didn't know the system, you didn't play. Right.
That leads to a great question, coach. Do you have a system, or do you create a system with the players you have?
Yeah, we have a set, you call it, right? Which is a traditional 2-2-2, but everything is based on movement, right? So if you're not moving in a 2-2-2, it's the same thing as a 2-2-2, and it's probably worse. But yes, is the short answer. But all of our dodges are to create a slide, right? I think too many times our younger lacrosse players think that as a midfielder, or even sometimes as an attackman, your dodge is to score. It's really not. It's really to draw a slide. And when you draw the slide, that next pass or the second or third pass becomes so important. So, yeah, I mean, we do run offensive sets, right? And then on defense, of course, we have our classic man in zone. But if we stray from the very simple basics of, hey, your job is to draw a slide. If you draw the slide, you're either making your one read or your two read where you're rolling back, and we're just going to do it again and do it again and do it again. And I loved what Kyle said too, because I know coaches that are like, nope, if you don't get the ball around three times, then you're not out there. Yeah. It's like, well, what does it do? It certainly doesn't prepare people for the college game now. And second, we talk about fun. I don't really enjoy watching that.
Or participating in that. Exactly. Right. And yeah. Again, it's a great point, because you want your players, let's say you get it around once, let's recognize, all right, who's got the short stick? Where do we have the advantage? Maybe where are they cheating to one side? Do we know maybe where the slide's going to come from? And what do you do as a coach to teach the offensive players not only that you don't have to necessarily beat your guy, you have to draw a slide and understand where that slide is coming from. Now, the other thing that is difficult to some players is the player with the ball understanding where the slide's coming from, but the player where the slide is coming from understanding your guy is sliding and you're open.
I think it's so hard, right? And especially that second guy, right? Where, okay, we can understand where slides are coming from adjacent or they're coming from the crease. But you're exactly right. Okay, well, then what, right? So I think the art of being a crease attackman is, in my opinion, one of, if not the hardest position in the sport, because you have to understand the offense. You have to catch under pressure. Then you have to make a decision under pressure, whether it's a shot or you're moving the ball around and going from there. So I think as a coach, I try to, when we are doing the classic 6-on-6, repping out our sets and making sure we understand what we're doing, Coach Joe and I have a 1 and 2 whistle system. It sounds silly, but super helpful. One whistle, you get the ball going, right? Or you're calling your usual plays. Two whistles means everybody just stops. And sometimes that's followed by me yelling freeze. So Kyle, when you said you're yelling for volume, to pick on people, right? That's a perfect scenario. But, and then we just try to walk through it. And we say, okay, Jack, take 3 steps forward. Do you feel how much more green space you have as opposed to just staying there? Or if the slide goes adjacent, where is our next move? And where is that help? So is the left-handed attackman giving good space for that dodger? Is the right-handed attackman clearing through for a lefty? All of those conversations happen. But I'm not a big proponent of watching film just to watch film. Now with Huddle and its ability to clip up and do all of those different things, we really only watch film once or twice a year. most of that is my homework to them. So when we only go for an hour and a half, I say, hey guys, spend 20 minutes tonight watching film. If you have some big paper to write, all right, we'll spend 20 minutes watching film tomorrow, and then push yourself to see where that green space is. So that freeze tool for us is most of what we do. Watching film is sometimes less.
Yeah, I think the best homework assignment that I give every year to every kid is, if you have a bad game, you're going to go home on Saturday and you're going to open up your laptop and you're going to find a college team and you're going to pick the kid that plays your position and you're going to watch the whole game. You're not going to watch his highlights. You're not going to watch. And you know what? You know why it's a laptop? Because I don't want you watching Division I players. I want you watching Division III players. I want you to know, because those guys, as we know, they always know where they're going. D1 guys have a little more improvisational ability, and it always looks way faster when you watch it on film.
But sometimes it's a little more structured.
Sometimes it is, but certain teams for sure. But if you're like, go watch a NESCAC game, right? Go watch two NESCAC teams play against each other and watch the kid that plays your position and where he goes and what he does.
Couldn't agree more.
The entire game. That's it. That's all you have to do, right? Like, watch the whole game. Don't fast forward. Don't do anything else. Just watch it.
Because now you're watching how it's done correctly.
Yes.
If you watch your own film, you're watching how it's done incorrectly.
Yeah.
So or now,
the team
like,
you're playing against.
They're like, okay, we keep watching film, though, coach, and we still don't know how to do it, right?
Exactly.
We don't know how to do it correctly.
Exactly.
That's a very good point.
I mean, I have to be
you
smart
You actually
about,
made a good point.
I know. My it's goodness. Wild, right? Coach, let's talk about everyone's favorite subject in Massachusetts. Divisional realignment. You were a Division II team last year. This year, what are we?
Division III.
D3 life, baby. Love it. How do you feel about that? And then how that's structured? Is that something you think about a lot?
And what's the process? And how did this all happen? Is this your AD? Is it, or is it the MIAA committee?
So my understanding is it's mostly based on enrollment, right? Yep. So how many kids go to your school? So part of me agrees with that, right? We should be playing against like-sized schools and,
sure.
and go from there. I think where I struggle with that is it penalizes people for starting programs. And it penalizes people for being in a situation, and as one high school across, sometimes it truly does matter who's on your team, right? Especially at a public high school. So from a division realignment perspective, I agree with it. I think at Division II, we were very competitive. It pushed us to be better. But at the same time, I don't think we ever would have been able to compete for a state championship. And I think that's the reality. In Division III, I think we have a real shot. So that's how I feel personally. I do like the power ranking system. I think it's going to make our sport better. I do feel like it will make the best elite, and it will make the not so good maybe go away. And that's not good for our sport. But
no.
I think the power ranking system is helpful. And I think it creates a true champion.
Let me ask you, do you think without the power ranking, head coaches like Keith Campbell at Long Meadow would not be willing to play you? Because of the power ranking now, they are willing to play you?
Yeah, I think selfishly, I think our program's in a good enough spot that we've earned to play people like Keith Campbell. But I do. Some of those mid-market teams that are in weird corners of the state are going to struggle to fill their schedule, right? Or you look at teams that you play now, and the stark reality is, I have to beat this team by 7. And for me as a coach, especially a high school coach, that doesn't feel right.
No.
Because as we know, 7 goals can happen, right? So now you're in a situation, do I put my starters back in just so I have a 7-goal spread? Because that doesn't develop your program. It's certainly not sportship. So
no.
it's kind of a catch-22. I think it's right for the sport. I think the decisions that they're making are good, and I think it does crown a true state championship. But in terms of the longevity of some lower-based programs where I used to be, I don't think it's good.
Right. Mention a couple of teams in Division III that you'll have to face and have to beat in order to become state champion. Who are some of the teams out there that good and you're going to have to play and compete?
Yeah, Grafton comes to mind, especially from Central Mass, the Central Mass region. Grafton and Al Rotatoria has done an awesome job in that
sure.
program and the culture they have there. I think Grafton jumps to mind. as I start to look outside of our region in Western Mass and in Eastern Mass, I think Westfield is one that jumps out to me. And then Scituate jumps out to me as well as you start to head down to the Cape. We played Scituate last year in the state championship hockey, so it's always kind of the first team that, you know, jumps out. I'm just impressed with that school's athletic culture as well.
Yeah, back in the day when Stu Curran was the coach, I know they won a number of state championships, God rest his soul. Were they Division II? Well, they always been Division III.
I'm new to Mass stuff. This is a 4-year learning process for me, man. Like, we're still figuring out. I mean, the team that I think everyone was talking about in the divisional shift was, you have two sides of it. You have Dover Sherburn, right? And then who is going up. And then you have Nauset, I think, is the other team. And then Drake it as well. So, like, you have all these, like, and they're all in, like, different parts, right? Yeah. So if you're trying to beef up your schedule within your division, which is very difficult because it's all based on, I mean, no
size
one's
of school,
and it's that, but it's also, we're not going to talk about this, but if you're an AD, you're not paying for a bus to go four hours away. Like, that's a possibility sometimes. So I mean, you're in Central, so if you're going east, your trips east are probably a little limited by the bus travel and how many away games you'll play. And then, like, if that team's going to play you next year is kind of the unwritten thing we're not talking about here, but that's a big part of advancing your program is playing teams that are better than you. And not like you said, like I think it's very problematic to have to run up a score at any point. Like, if you are winning by 6 or 7 or 8, your starters shouldn't still be in the game. Unless you don't have subs for that position.
Right.
Like,
especially,
you know,
at high school.
I mean, yeah, we did it. We had a game yesterday that we won 13-2, but, you know, our fourth quarter was all Javes. Like, for the most part, we had to keep a couple guys in and move the ball because someone's got to try and get them the ball, right? But the instruction was, we're not shooting, right? So we're looking for the JVs on the cuts. We're looking for them to dodge. We're looking to do this. And defensively, it's like, okay, well, we're out on hands. That's it. That's your instruction now. So I do think that's very problematic. And a power ranking does kind of mess with that a little bit. So I totally see what you're saying, Coach. I'm very lucky we don't have that in New Hampshire because we don't have to.
Right.
You know, but there's just so many teams in Mass.
Well, last 5 years, Hingham, very successful program. John Todd's done a fabulous job. They've been Division II, won a couple state champions. Division I, they may have won some at Division I. I'm not sure. Now they're back in Division II this year. So none of it makes sense. Doesn't, to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's kind of an unsaid rule, too, where, you know, the Super 8 in hockey used to be kind of the crown jewel where, you know, if you can win a Super 8, then it's a true state championship. So, I mean, maybe lacrosse looks into something like that. But then again, it comes into like a coach's poll. Oh, so then it's a little bit of a mess. But I don't
love that the 8 thing because, again, we can get into it. We don't have enough time today.
Hockey stuff? Come on.
No, not hockey stuff. Coach was a hockey player. I was a hockey player. But you got now Catholics versus public.
That's in lacrosse too, man.
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So if you have the elite eight teams, now you're going to have the Catholics versus the publics, and it's apples and oranges. That's my thought.
And that's
on
only
it.
Growing because that's going state to state now. You're doing, you got Bishop Gurton just getting,
I agree.
You got a wagon, you got Derryfield getting kids in. You got even Bishop Brady in Division III is getting more kids because of hockey. So it's a very I hate to say this, but I don't. Because I'm a coach too. If I was just a journalist, I kind of have to toe a line, but I don't have to do any of that. It's not fair.
It's not.
Sorry, man. Like, you all the Catholic schools should just play each other. Go state to state. Bring Bishop Gurton down to go play in the Catholic League. Go bring all these other, like,
LaSalle and Rhode Island.
St. Thomas in Division II in New Hampshire. Yeah, exactly. Like, that just needs to happen. Like, if that, then you have a champion. Then you have a different championship. You got a super championship, I
right.
guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I will say that, like, I'm proud of the culture that Central Mass Lacrosse has, where regardless of who's up and who's down, we all still play each other.
That's great.
So, and I think whether we take a beating or vice versa, I think us being able to honor those commitments and the culture that we've created with, hey, I know Jack really well and he knows our team's down. I trust Jack enough to say, hey, call off the dogs a little bit and show some sportsmanship. So I think ultimately if each coach can get on the same page and say, hey, we're here for the student athlete, we're here for the betterment of our sport, then, you know, what you guys are saying is spot on.
Right.
Yeah. It's a great place to end it, Coach. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. And best of luck this season, man. You got some big games coming up.
Yeah, best of luck, Coach. You. Pleasure having you. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
And thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Fiatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. See you next time.